From UCB Comedy Studios East in New York City, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody, I'm Nate Russell, and today I had a really interesting conversation with a couple of our good friends here at UCB, Charlie Todd and Mujan Zulfagari. They are some of the producers for Middle of the Night Show, which just premiered on MTV a couple weeks ago. It's an unscripted comedy show. It takes place in the middle of the night, where host Brian Murphy wakes up a celebrity and forces them to host a late night talk show. It's produced by our friends at College Humor. Really fun, funny stuff on the streets of New York all night long. So we had a conversation with them about that. Of course, Charlie Todd, he's one of the showrunners on the show. He's also the founder of Improv Everywhere, a New York City prank collective that's made, must be 150 videos by now, since... Gee, I think he started it in 2001, thereabouts. And of course, lots of viral videos in that time. And Mujan is a longtime producer, director, and actor, writer as well. Jack of all trades here at UCB and at UCB Comedy. At UCB Comedy, she was actually part of UCB One News, a digital team from 2014, 2015 that made about 50 unscripted videos, a news parody team. Great videos. You can find them on our YouTube channel. And Mujan talks about this, but she used a lot of those videos as part of her portfolio to book the gig, which is really great. That's what we want. So we talked to them about all that stuff and more. Let's jump right into it.
Well, guys, thanks for coming and doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Where are you guys at right now in your production cycle? Is it are you wrapped completely, or are you still
winding down? It's your last day tomorrow, right?
It's my last day tomorrow. Yeah, they're in post-production. I think they're working right now on like wrapping up the final episode, or like the final couple.
This afternoon I was watching down the final episode and
in the edit.
Sending that rough cut to MTV tonight or tomorrow.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So you're at the end of the production process, and as we're talking right now, episode
two is coming
is
out
airing on today.
Yes.
So that's when
right.
we're recording.
Mm-hmm.
And you're how many episodes are in this season?
Nine.
Cool. That's great. That's really exciting.
Yeah. It's really cool.
So I guess, let's just go back to the beginning of this project for you guys and go from it from there. So I guess, how did this project come about, and how did you guys both get involved, in it?
So, College Humor's production company called Big Breakfast, which is run by Sam Reich. And all the same people who make College Humor Originals, that whole team, they sold a pilot to MTV. They shot a pilot December 2014. MTV bought it, and I got an email from Sam and had a phone call with him whether or not I'd be interested in showrunning it. And it was a hard decision because I was like, I don't know if I'm qualified to do this. I've never done this before. But I watched the pilot and I loved it. And it had a lot of the same skills. I could tell that making that show used a lot of the same skills that I've gotten really good at through Improv Everywhere in terms of unscripted material, comedy that's out on the streets of New York, doing weird things with random strangers in public places in New York City is pretty much what I've been doing for the last 14 years. So I was like, oh, okay, I see why Sam emailed me. All right. I took the job and came on board, and then Mujan came on board probably shortly after that.
Yeah, I applied like a mass application that a bunch of other people did, and somehow I was one of the lucky four.
There was an email that went through UCB,
yes,
right?
Yes, I applied through there.
That's how you found out about it. Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, and so you got brought on as part of a team of four story producers.
Yes.
Right.
In Los Angeles, we were there. We wrote for 5 weeks with three other writers there. And then me and Dan Siegel, who's the other story producer / segment producer, we came back to New York to actually be on the field. So we're not only, you know, making the outlines, the jokes and everything, but we're actually in the field, there to make sure all the comedic elements are there.
We had a really good team that we put together. By the time I was fully on board with the show, they had narrowed the pool of applicants down for the story producer positions to, I think, like the top eight.
Sure.
And Mujan was one of them, and Zach Broussard was one of them, also at UCB. So the two of them got hired, and Dan Siegel and
Susanna Wolf,
who are from College Humor. Yeah, so we had like a really nice four-person team that was two people with a really strong UCB background, two people with a really strong College Humor background. Mm-hmm. So it was the whole production really from the creative side of things was a very nice mix of UCB and College Humor people and people who have done both, of course, as well.
That's great.
And then Mujan and Dan Siegel also had a lot of experience in production, being on set and really through UCB Digital and UCB One was certainly something that was in our minds with Mujan. Like, sure. Oh, yeah, she's produced unscripted stuff on the streets of New York before, yeah. So she would be good for that position, you know,
yeah.
As well.
No, absolutely.
So, yeah, we had our two writers who were in L.A. and did not come to New York, but Mujan came back to New York, and then Dan Siegel came to New York for the show.
We experienced the joys of Google Hangout.
Yeah,
it was, Charlie is very good at it. He puts a Google banner, a Google headband on his head.
Very good at the effects. No, it was a very virtual collaborative situation where we would have, you know, some of our producers would be in L.A. and or New York or some third location at any given time. So we had a good period. I only went out to L.A. for about a week.
Sure.
So we had one nice period where everybody was in the room together. And then beyond that, it was a lot of virtual hanging out and pitching ideas and segments.
But even like the first 5 weeks when all the writers were together in Los Angeles, it was, and the whole process is a very collaborative process. Even if it's one person's idea, it's everybody's idea because they all add so much to it.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And we should say, too, that Teresa Lee was a writer's assistant as well.
Awesome.
Oh, cool.
Also from UCB. And she was super helpful both in the function of writer's assistant, just being organized with all of our pitches and segment ideas, and then also contributing her own, you know, quite a bit.
That's great. Yeah, Teresa was on one of the digital teams here last year as well.
Another digital
win. Was that why she moved to L.A.? Was that that gig?
No,
she was in LA already, and then moving to LA.
She moved to LA and then just lucked into a job pretty quickly.
That's great.
Yeah,
awesome.
Because that's what happens in Los Angeles, I hear.
Yeah, you step off the bus.
You get a job. Welcome to Hollywood. Here's your money back.
What's that? What does that timeline look like? The pilot is shot last winter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then the show is like greenlit to series. So you're coming on board. When did you come on board to this project?
I probably had my first phone call with the Big Breakfast guys in like March or something. And then I had like a deal that was finalized and I'm definitely doing this in May. So there was like 2 months of like back and forth.
Getting it going.
Lawyer stuff and also just me sort of freaking out because, you know, it was an amazing opportunity, but it was also going to be a lot of work and a big time-consuming thing for someone who had a 10-month-old child at the time and also a YouTube channel that takes up a lot of my time as well. So I just, you know, I loved the show and I loved everybody that was working on it so much and decided that I needed to go for it even though it was out of my comfort zone.
Sure. And so when you're coming on at that phase of the process and into a position like a showrunner position, how developed is, you know, in this circumstance, how developed is the format or the idea at the point that you're getting involved and how much of it is like part of the process that came after that?
I mean, definitely the pilot was the roadmap when we were starting to come up with the format of the show. And Brian Murphy, who is the host of the show, is also a producer on the show and a major creative force, probably the major creative force for everything. So he and I did a lot of work, especially when I was in LA for that week, of just nailing down what the format was.
Yeah.
MTV's initial feedback to us is we want to have tentpole moments in the show, in terms of like every week there's a showdown competition, which we have. Mm-hmm. Every week we have a Remix the Night segment. Every week we wake up the celebrity in their hotel room. But for their audience, just having like the format that, and then we can play around and have fun with different ideas within that format. I should say too that I'm not the only showrunner on the show as well. They also brought in this guy Jay Chapman, who has a very long career of showrunning comedy, particularly stand-up specials.
Oh,
he
cool.
has expertise in that.
Yeah.
But he had also worked on a sketch show for the Logo Network not too long ago. So it was great because it was my first time doing it, and to be able to work with another showrunner who has done all the things that I had no idea about in terms of...
Right. You seem like you guys split it up. Like, you did more of the creative showrunning, and he did more of the, you know, overseeing all the little pieces.
Production pieces.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, and those would cross every now and then, too, and he would chime in with creative stuff, and I would, you know, also have to send emails to the legal team at MTV. And you know,
which were the best emails.
Yeah, standards responses. And practices emails are the best. Yeah. I just actually saw Abby Jacobson posted on Instagram some standards emails from Broad City. But, you know, just you get back this list from the standards person that's just like, this dildo needs to be blurred. Do not, you know, and it just ends up being like a list of cuss words like fuck, fuck, shit, 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 fuck, shit, 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 fuck, dickhead, fuck. You know?
Yeah.
We had one idea, which may or may not be happening, depending on something. But it's where our host, Brian Murphy, basically has, like, a device where he puts his junk into it, like a camel sack.
Uh-huh.
And so we got Sanders in Practice back that's saying, just make sure that he doesn't throw his feces. It's like, you know, just like basic, very soup. Just make sure, you know, when he's out in New York City, he doesn't throw his feces around.
That's great advice. No, I mean, that's good advice no matter what, though.
And it's just been funny that window into that world, because the person who's sending that email, like, is not a dumb person. That's just like, that's in her flow chart of like, if there's something to do with bodily fluids, I must cut and paste this thing that says, don't throw bodily fluids around.
Right.
Because probably someone on Jackass did it in 1999 or
and
whatever.
They have, yeah, they're aware of the possibility of it happening. That's really funny. So May is the time you're getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that the team of story producers that you're bringing in is whittled down. So you get it down. So at that point, it seems like you have a team of probably the – creative heads,
the big breakfast executives,
the big breakfast people that are sort of like involved. And then the team gets bigger. You bring in four story producers.
That's right.
And so what is the work like from there to the process of getting it so that it's ready to actually shoot your episodes? Did that pre-production process overlap with production? How segmented was it?
I mean, we had probably a month where we were just sort of throwing ideas at the wall and just brainstorming and starting to have our favorites bubble up. And
what was especially fun about it was the fact that, you know, it's a show that we had a pilot, but that pilot is just like a framework. And so we spent a lot of time just being like, what can we do with the show? We weren't going off of anything that wasn't existing before. So just a lot of brainstorming of just like types of segments, things, actions we could do, just like filling out a blank wall with all these ideas. Literally, we had a conference room where we just put cue cards everywhere around the conference room in different types of colors. So,
so you go real big with it sort of like first and then try to like pare it back down.
Yeah.
And that's over the course. So this is like, so you went out there and was this May or June?
Right around the 1st of June. Right?
Yeah.
Right around
the 1st of June. For 5 weeks. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then we opened up our New York office, I think, like June 15th. Or, you know, there was a time where we had offices on both coasts.
And so how quickly then does it move into production?
That was sort of one of the biggest learning experiences for me, is feeling like, all right, we're taking our time. We've got all these ideas. This is great. And all right, our episode one is probably going to be these ideas. And then having the other showrunner, you know, getting increasingly like, prodding me increasingly like, hey, we actually have to make this in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, all you know, the production side of things wants to know this. And this is like, oh, I don't know. It's still hypothetical. It's like, oh, this can't be hypothetical anymore.
Right.
Like, even though it's 2 weeks away, like the art director has to start making these things.
Sure.
And, you know, locations has to start finding a location. So.
So simultaneously to this process, you're also growing the team on that production side.
Yeah.
And production started in July?
July 15th.
July
15th. Our first day that we shot. And that was a big part of my job too, along with the other showrunner, just interviewing everyone.
Sure.
You know, interviewing associate producers, interviewing the casting director, you know, just every single team member we had to interview three people for. So you know, it was a lot.
And at the sort of like peak size of the team for a show like this, how big are we talking about it getting?
40 people?
40 people.
Yeah,
call sheets probably had 40. I mean, there were some people who were office only and some people that were only out in the field and some people who were both, but maybe 50 or 60 if you, you know, counted down to every PA.
And like it's, you know, we're not a show that shoots on a set.
Sure.
We are a traveling group of gypsies that like go around New York City. So we have all these people with us like going around New York in cars and like, yeah. So it's like a traveling production team.
What in the sort of like the ideation process of like coming up with the like creative bits for the show? I guess like how do you approach how to make something successful for this show? Like how do you approach an idea that like is a good fit for this?
I mean, there was definitely some trial and error, and we wrote and we shot more than we needed.
Sure.
You know, we ended up having like 10 deleted scenes that are being edited now, and then most of them will probably get released online.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them won't because they're not very good. But we had a very high success ratio. But I think in that, one thing that we did that was great was the very first week we only shot bits. Like, we didn't have a celebrity. So we learned a lot in that first week of like, oh, this kind of bit's not going to work that well.
Uh-huh.
Like, we can't. I think the biggest thing that I learned was that we could never rely on the people we're interacting with on the street
right.
to bring any sort of comedy to the
sure.
table. Obviously, Man on the Street is I love Man on the Street stuff, and our show is built on a lot of it. But it's got to be that we have a funny comedic premise and that people are sort of reacting to us and reacting to our silly premise, rather than trying to give the mic to a stranger and assuming that they're going to do something funny. Like, one of the first things we shot, I think the first week was we were going to play Would You Rather with people on the streets of New York.
Yeah.
And the Would You Rathers were like pretty funny, like hypothetical scenarios.
Yeah,
but
they're fun to play at a game, like a party or something like that.
If you were with a bunch of improvisers or comedians playing this game, like, there would be really funny explanations for why you would choose this absurd hypothetical over the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But just random people in New York did not know how to yes and, which of course they don't.
I think one person, as we were doing it, started having like a large speech for Bernie Sanders. Like, they're like, let me talk about Bernie Sanders. Like, it's not live. You do realize this, right? Like, we edit things out.
Right.
It is amazing that in 2015 that a healthy percentage of people who see a camera on the street think that they can get on live television by screaming. I mean, the UCB Digital did the video at the Juggalos, the fucker right in the pussy video.
Yeah.
Which still continues to this day.
That's
that
a
phrase.
Thing in New York City, too. I mean, it's, I would say every other night we heard it.
Yeah.
Not as bad as if you're at a gathering of the Juggalos, but like, there are some Juggalos in the city, I guess.
We
I
got
don't
know. To know what memes are still hot among the New Yorkers. The one about shoes was really big. Like, have you seen their shoes? I forget how it goes, but we had a couple people who just like go into the shot and say that.
That's a thing?
Yeah, that's another similar, less profane, but equally random thing.
So what do you think accounts for the high hit rate? Is it that you were bringing more premise to it than anything else? Like, what accounts for, like, if you guys are saying you had a good hit rate as far as like the stuff that felt successful in production, what's the quality of that approach that you think resulted in such a good?
Part of it is talent.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we had a very talented cast.
Sure.
But Brian Murphy is the host, co-host, because the celebrity's also
right.
the host. But you know, Brian is very likable, very funny, and does a really good job of just, I don't think he has an improv background, Murph.
We actually took Improv 101 together.
Oh, really?
But I don't know if he continued after that. Yeah, I knew that, but that was never part of like the conversation until halfway through the show. We're like, yeah, we took Improv 101 together.
That's so funny.
So I can attest that he does.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he has some improv. Maybe he took a few more classes too, but yeah, I think he more pursued, like, he rose through the ranks of College Humor really quickly.
Yeah. He's also very like self-deprecating and not mean, that like people just love interacting with him too, that it's just easy for him to just be in any situation, which is really great with him.
Yeah. He's very self-deprecating and very willing to do anything to the point of, as executive producer, I had to like multiple times be like, okay, Murph, you're not going to do this thing because it's going to harm your body. Like, we had a segment where it's like, okay, Murph goes to the meatpacking district and wears high heels on the cobblestone streets to try to empathize with the women who do this and see, you know, walk a mile in their shoes is what it was called.
Uh-huh.
And the premise is that he would literally walk a mile. But Murph wanted to go further and walk to Brooklyn.
He wanted to do 5 miles.
He wanted to walk 5 miles. Let's make it walk 5 miles. And we're like, Murph, we have to shoot additional bits with you tomorrow night, as well as the next 3 months. Like, you're not going to walk in high heels to Brooklyn.
That's funny.
I think we also had, like, an order that was always, like, our first segment we shot of the night was something where Murph got, like, physically, like, hurt, and then we just continue shooting other bits. Like, we start with something where we hit stuff, and he's like, yeah, I'll continue the rest of the night.
Yeah.
So he was hurt a lot.
That's funny. And you're talking about the way that you approach, like, going into production. Like, definitely, it seemed like you're probably shooting all the segments that relate specifically to the celebrity in the episode as a chunk. It's not like you're
correct
going back and forth with them in some sort of extended period of time. But other than that, was the approach that you had an outline for an episode, but you'd sort of, like, pick off all the bits from all the episodes as, like, a chunk of shooting?
Yeah, so each episode... the outline for the episode would have, you know, this. So there's a division between the celebrity night bits, the bits with the celebrity, and the bits without the celebrity. And we would have probably between 3 and 5 bits without the celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes things got edited out for time.
Sure.
But we would shoot. Those were just sort of modular bits that could be shot on any night. And then we had to, like, keep track of what was going to be in which episode because the celebrity would introduce them off cue cards.
So probably those elements are the most controllable as far as, like, you can take it as many times as needed, right?
No, I mean, we had a set number of hours we could shoot, and so everything was definitely in real time most of the time.
Yeah, we never, like, had a night where, like, oh, we didn't get that bit. Let's come back tomorrow and try again.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know,
there's this one where we had a segment. We thought it could work, and it ended up being completely, like, the opposite of what we wanted, which is, like, do you know their telephone number?
Right.
In which the idea was, like, we go to the streets of New York and see if people knew their nearest and dearest telephone numbers. Do you remember, you know, your mom's phone number? Some people don't. We were in the East Village next to this, like, part of what might be the drunkest part of New York City.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it was, like, 2 a.m., and, like, the craziest people started coming. And the immediately the thing was just dropped, and we're like, all right, let's just go with this now. And it was just, like, how many drunk, crazy people can talk with Murph in, like, a matter of 20 minutes or something?
Right.
We saw balls.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that's unique and interesting about our show is that we do shoot in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of our production was in the summer in July and August when it doesn't get dark until 9 o'clock.
Sure.
So we were shooting, you know, between starting at 9 p.m., wrapping at 3 a.m. pretty routinely. So we have an intimate knowledge of what people are like in many different parts of the city at different times. So we would look at, you know, our schedule and say, okay, this bit is better if drunk people are in it.
Right.
We'll shoot that at 2 a.m. at 2nd Avenue and 9th Street in front of the 13th Step Bar.
That's the corner.
Yeah, which is the worst corner in New York. But we had a bit that we wrote called Drunkspirational Quotes, and the idea was just to, like, get, like, high school yearbook quotes from completely drunk people and then set it to, like, inspirational music.
So funny.
So we deliberately shot that at that time.
Yeah.
After being burned once trying to do something more complicated there, like, we went back there for our dumb bits.
That's funny.
Or, you know, this bit, the joke is not that people are dumb or drunk. We just need normal people to react to us being silly. So let's do that and, you know, Union Square at 9:30 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But it's definitely a show that is what we shot is, you know, how New Yorkers really act to whatever characters we have or whatever situations we have.
So in the timeline of this, just to keep that going here, because we're now in October, right? And, like, the first episode aired a week ago, right? So you probably delivered a little bit before that. So you're delivering in September. So the timeline's getting tighter and tighter to that sort of, like, deadline.
Yeah.
So you're moving, you're opening a New York office. You come back to New York when?
I think July 12th or something like that.
Right before we start shooting.
Yeah,
right?
A couple days before we start shooting.
And you start shooting right there, middle of July.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when was production fully wrapped on all 9 episodes?
Coincidentally, the night before our premiere.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A week ago.
So not very long
October
ago at all.
7th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of that was because we shot some extra bits for a potential New Year's Eve episode, which may or may not happen. But.
Yeah.
So it got extended a little bit, but yeah.
It wasn't, you know, up to a certain point, it was very consistent. Like, we were shooting 3 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, when we shot all the crew bits, it was really reliant on the schedule of a celebrity. mm-hmm. of like when we could book someone. So that might happen every couple weeks. So it wasn't like we were going full force for these last couple months. Sure. We had some down weeks and yeah.
The celebrity booking was a really chaotic element of the show.
Sure.
And I think if we get a season two, hopefully we get a season two, it'll be a lot easier because we can show celebrities, hey, here's the show.
Right.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And here, The Miz from WWE did it. And, you know, Anthony Anderson from Blackish did it. And you should do it too.
Yeah.
Whereas we could show them the pilot, which was Emily Kenney from The Walking Dead. But I think it's just going to be a much easier, we're going to have an easier time of getting people. It was very
sure.
hard to get celebrities to sign up to be a part of this ridiculous. Well, I mean, you're asking them, come be in a show where you know nothing that's going to happen.
And you're mm-hmm. the focus, and it's all on, it's not all on you, but it's like you are a host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be the right kind of person. Like, not every celebrity is going to say, what? I'm on an MTV show, and right. there's no script, and you're just going to surprise me all night?
Yeah.
Well,
that's kind of why, that probably makes sense then why somebody like Middleditch winds up being your first episode.
Yeah,
like,
well, the first one.
Be down for that.
The first one that we shot, uh-huh. it was Adam Pally.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Adam was the first celebrity that said yes.
That's great.
Because drunkenly at the Del Close Marathon, I went up to him and said, you need to do our show. I told him, I'm not sure if you would be right for our show. I want you to do it, but I'm not sure. And that kind of got him riled up. Like, you'd think I can't do it? And I was like, I think you might be, like, ironically detached and, like, you might make, you know, like, make fun of the show and not, like, get on board. He's like, you don't think I can yes and your show? And, like, he, like, really, like, got,
That's
like,
funny.
On the offense on me on that. And,
it's called celebrity negging.
Yeah. I wasn't even meaning to neg him. I was just like, I don't know if you're – because that was a conversation we had about different celebrities, like, you know, who – because we are going to put them up in a hotel room.
Uh-huh.
We're going to enter their room at a time that they're not expecting us and turn all the lights on and wake them up and force them to do a bunch of bits. Like, not everybody's going to be on board with that. You know, and the celebrities are prepped and they know that they're on this like unpredictable show, but they don't know exactly how it's going to go down. So it was nice that we had a friend at the first episode.
Yeah. I mean, that also goes back to the sort of like the team that you're talking about building is that there's trust in there and then that trust extends to the next level. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
As far as like building it that way.
And then Thomas Middleditch, was he the second one we shot or
no,
Jordan?
I think Jordan was the second, yeah.
So Jordan Sparks was the second one we shot, and Jordan has done some stuff with College Humor in the past, so she had a working relationship too. She was sort of a friend of the show. And then Thomas Middleditch was also a friend of the show. So it was nice, the first few that we did, it was like, okay, these are people who sort of know us and trust us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also generous in giving us more time. Like, we probably had 6 hours with those celebrities.
Sure.
The last episode was Anthony Anderson, who would only give us 3 hours. And that was like we had to really come up with bits that could be done very efficiently.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that was actually, you know, 3 hours, all right, short day. No, it was probably our longest day because we spent so much time ahead of time just like,
look,
we have 3 hours, so we have to make sure everything is on point and we can do this. So we rehearsed without him, of course. But like, so when we were there, we got it.
I know. I totally thought like, only 3 hours. This is going to be great.
We're going to end, go to the hotel, hang out.
Talking to the other showrunner and the AD, it's like, you guys are right. We should rehearse this whole thing.
Is there a large overlap then as far as like, because a lot of the celebrity guests are booking late in the process, so you're still sort of like, there's also probably some planning and sort of like ideation happening. I guess how deep into the process was active writing happening into production?
Late, because the celebrities were booked, mm-hmm. you know, on a rolling basis. And we had we had our outline for episode 109. But then when we found out that Anthony Anderson was going to be the host of that episode, we had to go back and look at all of our bits and think like
to tailor it towards
that. You know, Googling Anthony Anderson and learning his likes and dislikes and finding out what his hobbies are and what he might get excited about.
We learned that he likes golf and gardening and food.
Oh. Really? And we didn't use any of those in his episode.
But it's probably valuable that at that point that you had that conference room, you know, full of ideas to go back to.
Well, at that point, that was in Los Angeles. So at that point, that conference room was on Trello.com.
Uh-huh.
So it was an online that we did that. But even then, it's like the writing process continued on because we have to make sure all the ideas that we had were producible and they had all the beats and they were ready on the field, which actually UCB One and like the digital team really helped me like figure that out. Because it's like, all right, you go there, you have the basic idea, you know what the intro you want, but what's the middle and how do you want to end it?
Sure.
And if that doesn't work out, what are the other beats you can go through? And if that doesn't work out, so you can't just really rely on going out in the field and like, let's see, you have to be prepared.
Especially on the celebrity night.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, that was what we learned. Like, you know, we had our paragraph idea. Great, this feels like it's done. And then when we had to like get it to production, it's like, okay, we need to really get specific.
Yeah, hammer it
down. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny just being in a production like this from the beginning to end where you just have an idea and me being on sort of all sides of it, being in that room with the story producers and pitching the ideas for segments and figuring out which ones we liked and sort of the sky's the limit, great. And then like a month later being in another room with the line producer and the other showrunner and, you know, the production side and being like, oh yeah, we have to actually do this. Maybe we need to not do this and this.
Yeah. Right.
There's this great moment where we had one episode where Flew LaBorg was our host. He's a YouTube personality and he's in Pitch Perfect too. And we were going to have him interview a flair bartender, which is, you know, someone like Tom Cruise from Cocktail who juggles glasses and bottles and stuff. And we were talking with the casting director who had found a flair bartender for us in a big production meeting with our whole staff. And she was like, yeah, he's also able to set drinks on fire. And like at the same time, I said, oh, that's amazing. We can set drinks on fire. Awesome. And I'm like, you know, smiling and happy. And the line producer across the way is like, oh, he can set drinks on fire. What? You know? And it was just this great moment of like creative production on different sides of the table, having opposite reactions to the news that we were going to have fire on our show. And we ended up having fire.
Yeah.
And it was great.
It was great.
And it was a little dangerous. Yeah. But
that's great. There were some ideas I were excited about. And then that also meant that they had to hire a medic.
And keep them there.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
It was funny, too, because two of our story producers, Zach and Susanna, were never in New York, right? So they continued to work on the show from L.A., and we would check in with them, Google Hangout.
Yeah.
But we started joking by the end of the process that, like, their ideas were usually the most unproducible ideas because they didn't have to worry about it, you know? So Murph would be like, that's a very L.A. room idea, you know, this... Yeah, we're going to get
the luxury.
You know, they would write something like, we're going to get a steamroller and we're going to crush items with a steamroller. And it's like, I don't want to get a steamroller.
Like, we're not you're doing in this. It now.
That sounds great, but we got to do this in like 5 days. And I can't go tell the locations manager that we need a steamroller.
Here's another question for you as far as the process goes, because you're also mentioning how sort of like bi-coastal this was and using some tools like sort of like digital tools to like get you there. As far as like the building of the show goes, what type of collaborative tools did you guys benefit from?
Google Docs,
all Google products, yes.
Google Hangout,
Slack, is like used in many companies. I've learned
very popular.
Yep,
you use the Trello, but that's just as like a database of like virtual cue cards or like a breakdown.
And where does like the home base for like episode like? What's the home base? Because you're also not probably using Final Draft, right?
Because we use just Google Docs.
So just in Google Docs.
Yeah, breakdown.
So it's not a scripted show.
It's not scripted.
There's no scripts.
Yeah.
And there's no dialogue that's ever written. Mm-hmm. So it's all just Google Docs.
That's really interesting because it's the sort of thing where it's like you rely so much in scripted work with like having that central like tool of a script to be your hub, right? That's the thing you can go back to. And really, in this unscripted space, you have to find a way to, you know, to still have that. So you guys were doing that over like Google Documents, basically.
Yeah, and Teresa, our writer's assistant, was great at just keeping all of that organized and keeping all of that on point. And there were, you know, there were days where we would have to do rewrites and like, you know, the segment ideas for four different segments, and we would all be in the same Google Doc, and you'd see five cursors moving around, and, you know, everybody changing stuff and.
That's really great.
It's kind of, I don't know, the internet's great.
Yeah.
Middle of the night show, pro Google.
Pro Google. So, and then, so you're shooting wrapped a couple weeks ago. When did the post-production process start?
Pretty much right away.
Right away.
Yeah, that scaled up where we had one editor, and then we had two editors, and then we had three editors, and we had four editors. And now, as of this week we've only had three, mm-hmm. and then a couple of weeks we'll go back down to two. It's everything sort of scaled up and scaled down.
New York or LA?
Post is here.
Yeah, here.
Yeah, we have an office. Our production office was down in the financial district, and we had our post and our production right together, which was great.
How much of that team is carryover from the College Humor world?
None.
None at all.
All well, editors that we hired here in New York.
Right. Editing.
Well, there are people, editors, none. There is the, what is Andrew's title?
Post-production supervisor, I think.
That's Jamie, right?
Yeah, it could be Jamie.
There's so many people.
He is.
I should know.
Post.
No, I think post-coordinator.
Post-coordinator, yeah, that's yeah. right, that's right.
So Andrew Maloney, is that how you say his last name? He's Big Breakfast. He was a post guy from Big Breakfast who came to New York to work on this.
Yeah.
But the editors we all just hired. We
cool.
interviewed editors and got some really great editors.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And is this an Avid show?
It is an Avid show.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys have made it.
We made it if you made do
it.
Avid.
Yeah, you made it.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because we were, you know, in trying to find editors. Like,
yeah.
The first round of interviews that we conducted with editors were people who were more from the reality TV world.
Sure.
That maybe our post supervisor knew from prior shows. And they just didn't really feel like they were going to be a fit based on, you know, the just total reality stuff that they had done.
Mm-hmm.
Even though our show is technically a reality show, I guess. Not really. So we started just trying to find more people from the comedy world.
Right.
But we did bump into the finding some talented editors from the comedy world who don't know Avid.
Sure.
So that was frustrating.
It's that overlap of, like, Avid is definitely, like, a high-end professional tool.
Right.
And that so much comedy work comes from a different origin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It comes from
all the jobs I've worked
place.
On as just a producing, always Avid.
Yeah. I mean, but I also think that is starting to change. We're doing that. The show that UCB is making for CISO is Premiere.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, but also that was also a challenge to find editors who had the experience
in Premiere
necessary. And I don't even know that those guys had done like full that sort of like level of delivery through Premiere. But that was the tool that we had in house,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they've been utilizing. So like it's and it's working. It's actually been really great. But it's just like there is like this weird dynamic in that world of like Avid is for one type of, you know, business model, and Premiere and what used to be Final Cut is another type,
right?
And it's rare that the two shall meet, right?
This what's really important, because it is an unscripted show and we do have like an outline of what we have the story to be and the ideas we have to be.
Yeah,
what's really important with an unscripted show is that the you know, it's found in editing sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's important to have an editor who's very in touch with comedy and knows what they're looking for, or else it just doesn't work. And so a lot of the, you know, we go out in the streets, the X factor is there, which is the people of New York. We never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's about bringing that X factor in the edit and like making
and
it work.
That was a big job that Mijan had, and Dan Siegel, who was also a producer in the field along with Mijan, of just taking notes in the field and delivering those to the post team of saying, this is what happened.
Yeah.
We thought the segment was going to go like this, and it mostly did, but also this more interesting thing sort of started happening, so we should emphasize that. And
yeah, we were like editing on the field.
Yeah.
How involved were you guys in the actual editing process?
I've been very involved.
Very
involved in all of it, yeah.
So you're still in it every day, pretty much?
Less now. I mean, we're starting to wind down, but yeah, it's been, you know, I've been going into the office a few times a week to watch cuts.
And Mujan, as it fall, Liz, has that end of things fallen off as far as for you?
Like it's a little, we definitely like in the field, we give our notes.
Yeah.
And after that, it's more in the hands of like the showrunner, mm-hmm. and Brian and MTV and also Big Breakfast. There's a lot of people.
A lot of voices.
A lot of voices, yeah.
There are a whole lot of people giving their feedback. And it's, I think there was some concern at first from the post team of like, oh my God, we're getting notes from so many different directions. But I think everybody's, since all these creative cooks are really in agreement with what the show is, particularly after the first couple of episodes were in the can and we could sort of unify our vision, it's been really surprisingly easy. But you've got the creative executives from Big Breakfast who are giving notes, the director of the episode, which was Paul Bergante for some, and Matt Kasman for others.
Canadian.
They would give notes on the episodes that they produced. And two showrunners.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a lot of people. But it's been working.
And so it was just two directors throughout the whole season. That also
yeah.
probably makes it easier than if it was like, let's say, nine.
yeah.
Right.
yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Paul was working on Adam Ruins Everything. Paul did the pilot. And then he was working on Adam Ruins Everything at the same time. So, I mean, Big Breakfast is, you know, just had this sort of crazy time period where, you know, they're a relatively new production company. I mean,
yeah.
they've been doing College Humor originals for forever, but the name Big Breakfast, I think, is only a couple of years old. And then all of a sudden they sold two shows at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have pilots in the works as well.
Yeah.
Like Jake and Amir pilot. There's something's happening with that and, other shows they're developing. But anyway, getting these two shows that premiered within a week of each other
yep.
at the same time, I think has been crazy for that company. And so there's been a lot of people like Murph has been acting in Adam Ruins Everything as well. So he's flown back a couple of times to do that.
Yeah. It must be a really exciting time for them because that has happened quick
yeah.
in a big way. It's
yeah.
really exciting.
Yeah.
How much time do we have left? Do you guys have to run soon or
what time
it's
is
five
it?
After seven?
I probably like another 10 minutes.
Okay.
What are we eating?
Well, let me ask this. So I guess Mujan, we've touched on this a little bit, but like from the perspective of the work that you did on UCB1 last year,
right.
which is definitely of an entirely different scale, right?
Yeah.
I guess just, what of that experience felt benefit, like what felt beneficial for this gig for you?
A lot of it. I mean, just going out in the field and knowing that I think what we talked about the talent being a really important part. That's very important. And it's because we wrote with very strong point of views. And it's about having a strong point of view and going out in the field with that and playing against this X factor, which is the
yeah.
field. Yeah, so I think there's a lot I did at UCB1 that was very similar to what I did. Of course, this time we had an amazing like art director and a budget and everybody involved
yeah.
and a giant team of people and money and like, all that. So it was like taking UCB1 and making it like another dream. But also the tone of the show was different. Like UCB1, you're like tailoring it towards news, but it's like, okay, what's the voice of middle of the night? What are we trying to prove here? And it's about being silly and it's going out and taking like kind of had like an old school late night show
yeah.
vibe to it. We all used to actually watch together, the writers, like our favorite things that we've seen on late night. We watch like Conan. We watch like early Letterman. We do things to like inspire us to like bring it back what we loved as like kids watching late night and to put that in the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our show is, we call it a late night talk show, but there really aren't any guests.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have a celebrity who is the host of it. And in our first few episodes that we shot, we would do like a guest interview, like Flula Borg interviews a bartender. But by the end of the season, we just sort of realized like that's the least exciting part
yeah.
of the show. Let's go do something fun rather
yeah.
than just interviewing someone. So it really isn't a talk show.
Yeah,
at
right,
all.
Right. Just
it's sort of a late night comedy show that's just the field pieces, which is for me like when I used to, you know, watch Conan or whatever back in the day, you know, you fast forward through the monologue.
Right.
We have a monologue, yeah. but it's like 20 seconds.
Yeah, we write a lot of monologue jokes and then one gets in.
Yeah, like, yeah, like two monologue jokes get in
yeah.
and then we immediately cut to a field piece. So, you know, to me, like I would fast forward through Conan's monologue to get to when Triumph goes to the Star Wars line or whatever.
Sure.
And our show, not to compare ourselves with the greatest field piece in all late night history, Triumph goes to Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
but our show is just the fun part, I think. And that's what
yeah.
why I like it so much. It's just the ridiculous idea out in the field.
Yeah.
Let's go do it.
It's like Letterman throwing watermelon outside of
yeah.
his building. It's just doing dumb, fun stuff. Yeah.
Right.
And we should mention the other talent in the show, too. So Alex Watt plays the page,
uh-huh.
Middle of the Night Show page, and has a lot of segments that he carries
yeah,
by,
super
by himself.
Yeah.
Really, really funny guy,
yeah.
College Humor guy.
Yeah.
Came up, I think he and Murph both started as interns at College Humor and came up over the years. And then Anu Valia holds the cue cards. That's
yeah.
her practical job in the show, but then she has segments that she carries
yeah.
on
also
her own,
very
too.
Funny.
Yeah.
And she's
yeah.
great.
And yeah. she's awesome because she was a producer for such a long time at College Humor. And so there are a lot of people at College Humor who just work behind the scenes, too, that are ended up on the show. Like Dan Siegel used to be just like a producer, too.
Right.
And now he's doing this.
That's
and then
great.
Anu is like she does, you know, used to be everyone's like the bitch work, and now she's having like a starring role, which is all so awesome. She's so funny.
And the sound guy, Harris Carlin, who, you know, is the literal boom operator for our show, but also, you know, is in an on-camera capacity as well.
Right. As himself. The dainty sound man that he is. That's
funny. For you, Charlie, how did obviously this show's a huge undertaking, commitment, and a huge opportunity. I also noticed that you've been still putting out content on your channel this summer.
Yeah, that was hard. That was definitely hard. I was fortunate that I did this collaboration with a new YouTube venture called Field Day, where we shot some videos in April, where in a two-day period we shot three videos. So I had a few videos that were banked, and then right before we started, I did a video at the Governor's Ball Music Festival. So I had three or four videos kind of in the can, and our release schedule is pretty lax at Improv Everywhere. It's like one a month. Mm-hmm. So I was able just to put out one a month through this time period. Although now that we're winding down, I'm realizing I don't have a video and I need to go make something really soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one thing that I wanted to talk about, just in like the way things ramped up. And then all this, when we were, it was really stressful in the middle of the process when we were like editing last week's episode, working on the script outline for next week's episode, shooting this week's episode, and just especially as the showrunner, it was like, oh, okay, so three nights this week I'm going to shoot from like 9 to 3 a.m., but I still have to work from like 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day too, because I'm getting emails from MTV and from the Big Breakfast folks and from coworkers. So there was like a stretch where it was like, oh, wow, yeah, I'm going to go to bed at 4 and then my baby's going to wake me up at 8. I'll go back to sleep for a little while, but then he's going to be banging on my door. So I'm up at 9 and I got to kind of work from 10 till 6. Oh, and then I got to leave for set because we're called at 7. Yeah. Like, it's like, there was a stretch, and not just me as showrunner, like a lot of us, where it was like, wow, we're kind of sleeping for 6-7 hours and working the rest of the time.
Right.
I think that was tough.
Yeah. The first week I was there, I remember we got like in New York, we got a gift basket from MTV that was a bunch of 5-hour energies and little flashlights. And we're like, oh, right. Oh, this is what we're doing. Yeah. We'll be needing this.
And we got better as the season went on in terms of just learning how to be more efficient with our time at night. And then also as fall started nearing and the days started getting shorter and we could shoot at 7 o'clock or the 9 o'clock, it made it a lot easier. Yeah.
But also, it was a great idea to shoot in the summer because I heard the pilot, which they shot in like December, January, was the worst.
They think it was really cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the show should be shot in the spring or the fall when the weather's
the days
in the
are starting.
Yes.
And there's more nighttime.
Sure.
But who knows if we get a season two, when we'll shoot it.
Yes.
And what's the feedback been thus far for you guys?
Good. Yeah. I mean, I should say too that MTV has been great to work with. Our executive there, the main executive in our show, is this guy, Dane Riley, who was an EP on Billy on the Street, and who comes from the NYU film world and who has worked with a bunch of UCB people over the years and like comedy stuff for the web. And he's been great just because he worked on the pilot and just he's been championing the show, gets the show. The notes from him on our script outlines and on the cuts and stuff have always been, you know, in service of making the show great.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been very lucky. In general, you know, the other people at MTV, you know, there's someone sort of above him who kind of runs their development in general, I think, Paul Ricci, and we've gotten some notes from him too that have all been great, but it hasn't been that process of just getting like miserable pages and pages of notes from the network, which has been great.
That's great.
And so far, episode one is shown a couple times, repeated. I do go on the Twitter, and the teens seem to like it. So we'll see.
Oh, have you been trolling?
I've been trolling teens. I've been not only seeing what they're saying, but the rest of their feed. But that's another thing.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
You know, what I like about it is that, our demo is probably aiming towards more boys than girls is, you know, sort of what we were told. We're on the Thursday
Although
night.
We must note that the writer's room was 50-50.
Yeah, it was, which is awesome. I think MTV's Thursday night block is like more geared towards boys, and it's probably like high school, college age. But what I think we did a good job hitting that demo.
Yeah,
I really like the show as, you know, a 37-year-old man. I think the show's great.
Although I will say that when the show premiered last week, I was visiting home, and I walked in on my parents who were watching it, and they're very conservative, culturally conservative Iranians, and they were, of course, watching the sex shop scene where our host Murph goes and works at a sex shop, and they did look at me, and they're like, "This is what you do?" And I'm like, "Yes, Mom. Yes. I am so sorry."
Our first episode is probably the bluest.
I know. I'm like, watch more. Jordan Sparks, American Idol. You like that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, I mean, you know, I watched that first episode. I thought it was really fun. I'm definitely going to keep watching. It's Thursday nights. What time?
Thursdays at 11. Mm-hmm. And also you should watch because there's UCB cameos throughout the season.
Throughout the season. We use a lot of UCB talent.
I think I saw Pat Bear in the Wizard outfit.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Marshall was the bear.
Oh, great.
Connor Ratliff Connor was a pimp. Pimp for a hot second in
Ken
the
Beck is a, was a lumberjack, but you will see him, but maybe not.
Very nice.
See
Eddie
him.
Dunn appears as a wrestler in two different episodes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He has an arc.
Uh-huh. Yes, he does. There's going to be a press conference filled with a bunch of UCB people.
Very nice.
Featuring Waka Flocka Flame.
Very nice.
Yep.
And for those who do not, because we're also in the, you know, not everybody has cable anymore.
Right.
Yes.
You can watch it online.
MTV.com.
MTV.com.
The first episode has been released for free on MTV. I don't know if other episodes will be or not.
Okay.
But clips will be.
Yes, clips. They
so
sometimes
you gotta
have
cable
YouTube.
If you want to keep watching.
Or at Amazon Prime, I believe.
Yes. Okay,
right?
Good.
It's on site
it's somewhere.
Yeah, I think it might
could be.
Okay.
Wrong, but.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Because that's how I'm going to have Skate Watch. But that's great. Well, congratulations, guys. I mean, and you know, I think that you guys are two of the more hardworking people that I know. And the success seems well-deserved.
Oh,
and
thanks.
I'm excited for you guys and excited to see. Hopefully you guys get a season two and can do it all over again. And you guys would sign up for a season two?
Because we're going to shoot in Barcelona, right?
Yeah?
Season two, Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Very nice. Cool. Well, thanks so much for doing it, guys.
Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate. Right.
You've been listening to the UCB Digital Podcast. Subscribe to this podcast and all the rest of our shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. And check out our videos for sketch and experimental comedy, YouTube/UCB Comedy. For narrative series and short films, Vimeo/UCB Comedy. And across the social media universe, visit us at UCB Comedy. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you on the internet.